This is an I Am Listening original podcast.
I think it was a desperation to show that we can do it, but it's not a way of doing it. It's not a democratic way of doing this. I agree your observation. There's a lack of experience in running local governments. If you can't run a council, how are you going to run the country? That's the bigger question we should be asking.
Welcome to the Kent Politics Podcast.
In this week's episode, we hear how Reform UK's KCC leadership is facing the most serious crisis yet. There's renewed controversy over plans for homes on University of Kent land, and there are angry scenes as rival groups clashed at a 90-migrant demo in Medway. I'm Simon Finlay, the local democracy reporter covering Kent County Council, and I'm joined by Dan Essen, who reports on the Borough and District Councils.
Hello.
And Robert Boddy, who covers Medway Council.
Hello.
And Nikki White, who's looking after what's happening with our MPs.
Hello.
Our special guest today is Ashford MP Sojan Joseph, who will be speaking about the fallout from Reform UK's fallout at County Hall this week. First up, Dan, what have you been looking at this week?
As usual, I've been trying to stay abreast of the twists and turns in writing local plans, but this time in Canterbury, where they've released a new and updated version of their local plan for about 1,200 homes a year until 2040. Obviously, with that many homes, the proposed sites are spread all throughout the district, but by far the most controversial single site was an allocation for a new settlement of 2,000 homes on land owned by the University of Kent near the Bleam Woods. This attracted very significant public opposition, and in this new version of the plan, it's been removed from the proposals entirely.
Did the council remove it because it's unpopular?
No, officially popularity has nothing to do with local plan formulation. The council said there'd be problems accessing the site if they actually built there, and also said that it would be undeliverable and it would pose risk to the local environment because it's so near to ancient woodland. However, I found out last week that the University of Kent, which owns the land, wrote to the local campaign against their proposals, basically saying that they were going to push ahead with the plans anyway. It's no secret that the university has been in a pretty dire financial crisis for many years on the trot now. They've closed courses, laid off staff, and in recent months announced a merger with University of Greenwich. In the letter sent by the acting vice-chancellor to campaigners, she says the 2,000 home development is necessary for their finances, which seems like a pretty business-like way of saying they're desperate for the cash and don't have much of a plan for making any more money other than getting this land built on.
If that site's been removed from the local plan, do they actually have any chance of getting planning permission in the future?
In theory, not really. You know, it's near ancient woodland in a very sort of well-used and popular local nature area, and all the problems that led the council to remove it from the plan are unlikely to change anytime soon. You know, it's hard to access. They say it'd be very difficult to build there. So if and when the developers come forward with a planning application for that site in future, the council would, in theory, be within their rights to say, that land isn't allocated for housing, you're not building there, jog on. However, when councils have delays in building or allocating land for housing or in their local plan process, the government says they have to accept housing in places they wouldn't usually. For example, sites like this one. Also, developers can use that argument at appeals to try and get rejections from local councils refused. So basically, I expect over the next few years or so, the uni and the development partners, pretty much every official means available to them to try tie up the council in bureaucracy and get planning permission on that site, whatever anyone else thinks about it.
Robert, what's been happening in Medway?
This week, I've taken a leaf out of Dan's book and I followed the UKIP march, which took place in Rochester High Street on October 18th. The march was against illegal immigration and small boats and had been billed as a family-friendly event to demonstrate a show of patriotism. There was also a counter-demonstration from Medway's Stand Up to Racism, who assembled at the main junction on the High Street, Northgate. There was a large turnout, but mainly for one side. The march had around 10 people or so taking part, including two children, and set off from across the road from Rochester Station at 2 p.m. When they got to the junction, they were met with over 100 counter-demonstrators being bordered by a line of police officers keeping the two groups separate. The march went down the rest of the High Street and then turned almost back on itself coming up Castle Hill and was supposed to finish in front of Rochester Cathedral. However, due to the large number of counter-protesters, the police diverted them into the grounds of Rochester Castle, where they had a couple of speeches and had a debate with two passers-by before dispersing.
What were the two sides saying and what was the reaction from the public?
Roger Hogg, who has organised other demonstrations elsewhere in the county, said it was to send a clear message to the government that people aren't happy with asylum seekers arriving in the UK and getting benefits, medical treatment and other services faster and better than UK citizens. Our guest from last week, Amelia Randall, UKIP's KCC councillor, said after the march that although there weren't many of them, it was important that they had stood up and shown their dissatisfaction. On the counter-protest side, I spoke to many who said they felt it was important to stand up against what they saw as fascism sexism and racism and essentially nipped it in the bud before it grows. Some also said the anger of the marchers towards illegal immigrants was misplaced and it was politicians who were serving big business rather than the working class who were the problem. The general public had a mixture of reactions. There was a big police presence, which I heard people commenting on being a waste of money considering the size of the march. And there were some people supporting the march, though not joining it. But a lot of shoppers, because it is a busy high street, shouted things like, shame on you, and other criticisms. All in all, it has been claimed as a victory by the counter-protesters, and while Rochester has been the scene of significant clashes between right and left protests, with the marches around the 2014 Rochester and Shrewd by-election, the scale of this one probably will mean it doesn't go down in the history books.
So Simon, what have you been up to of late?
Oh, it's been a torrid week for Reform UK at County Hall, thrown into turmoil after The Guardian published a video online last Saturday evening of a meeting of a virtual Reform UK meeting which took place this summer. I'm sure most people have probably seen it by now when we saw Lyndon Kemp-Caron, the leader of Kent County Council, shouting and swearing at members during the meeting and generally not showing herself in a particularly good light. I mean, I won't dwell too much on the whys and wherefores of the content of the leaked video, but what it has set in motion is a whole train of events. Firstly, within a couple of hours, we were able to disclose a very strongly worded statement sent to members from Lyndon Kemp-Caron saying that the people suspected of the leak were cowards, that they were foolish, and this was an act of treachery. She also said that a thorough investigation was underway and the culprits would be drummed out of Reform UK and that they would have no political future. The next day, which was the Sunday, I heard back from a backbencher who disclosed to me that they were seriously considering gathering signatures of other backbenchers to hold a vote of no confidence in the leader. Under section 14.43 of the KCC Constitution, only 5 signatures are needed, and this is needed to put it into a motion and tabled at the next full council meeting. This is, in theory, could happen in a matter of weeks. Anyway, that was the Sunday, and then the next morning, the Monday morning, we heard that 4 councillors had been suspended on suspicion of leaking the video. They were Maxine Fothergill, Paul Thomas, Bill Barrett, Oliver Bradshaw, who were all elected in May. Now, councillors Fothergill and Thomas both said they were innocent. Councillor Barrett said he wouldn't comment, and Councillor Bradshaw was approached but we couldn't get hold of him. There were dramatic scenes at County Hall when Maxine Fothergill was removed from the chair of a panel that morning and fled the place in tears, having surrendered her laptop to the IT department. And there was quite a flurry of activity, particularly amongst the journalists, although most of the cabinet who were floating around saying nothing, but they were friendly enough. And then the next day, which is the Tuesday, Lyndon Kemp-Caron, on the advice of Reform HQ, sent out a note asking members for their written support. I mean, this also got leaked. The pledge read, we the undersigned, etc., etc., leading, this is quote, leading a large group of newly elected county councillors was a huge task in itself. To also lead the largest and most complex authority in the country was almost an impossible task for one person to take on from a standing start. But Lyndon rose to the challenge without hesitation. She has the opposition firmly on the run, and under her guidance, Reform UK members are flourishing in their roles. She is leading the group and the council with courage, integrity and discipline. End quotes. One Reform backbencher told me that Lyndon is clearly rattled, although few believe that a vote of no confidence would actually go against her, but whether she can survive the days and days of negative headlines remains to be seen, but we'll probably have a chat about that later on. Nikki, what's been happening down your way with the MPs?
No surprises this week, Simon. After the video of that chaotic Reform meeting was leaked and the fallout escalated, 7 Kent MPs got together and demanded that Lyndon Kemp-Caron quit, while an 8th labelled her behaviour as unacceptable. In a letter sent to Reform leader Nigel Farage, the Labour MP said Councillor Kemp-Caron was clearly not up to the job and they expressed deep concern at the ongoing situation. Now, they've called on Mr Farage to join their calls for her resignation. I'm not sure how they'll get on with that, but we'll see. The letter said that swearing and berating other councillors was not only deeply unprofessional, but undermined respect for those in public life and service. Now, for those that don't know, the letter was signed by Polly Billington, Jim Dixon, Sojan Joseph, Kevin McKenna, Tony Vaughan, Nashaba Khan and Tris Osborne. And then also independent MP Rosie Duffield, who represents Canterbury and Whitstable, she also joined in the criticism and she described the footage of Councillor Kemp-Caron's stonewalling questions as completely unacceptable.
There wasn't much sympathy, was there?
No, not really. I mean, the MPs did acknowledge that running a council is hard, but said if you can't handle the pressure without losing your cool, then it's time to step aside. They also added that they felt that the people of Kent deserved better. But as they pointed out, it now means Reform UK has lost 7 Kent councillors since May for one reason or another, and that's more than one a month since they've been in power, and that's not a good record.
Okay, thank you very much, Nikki.
Is there a topic that you would like to be discussed on the Kent Politics Podcast? Perhaps you've got a question for one of our panel, or you'd like to comment on a hot topic in local or national government. Get in touch by emailing or sending a voice note to Kent Politics Podcast at thekmgroup.co.uk.
Ashford MP Sojan Joseph was one of seven Labour MPs from the county who wrote to Reform UK leader Nigel Farage following the video's release. So they think that Lyndon Kemp-Caron should leave her position as KCC leader. So, Sojan, thank you very much indeed for joining us.
Thank you, Simon. Thanks for having me.
Excellent. Thank you very much indeed for coming on. What made you decide to write to Nigel Farage, and have you had a response yet?
No, we haven't got a response yet. See, Simon, the reason I put my name to that letter is same like all other Labour MPs who put their name. It's because we want things to get better in Kent. We got elected back in July. People had enough of a long Conservative government in Westminster and long Conservative administration in Kent. The people wanted to see the change, and we are trying to make changes so that we'll have an impact on people's life. KCC is a local authority who needs to deliver some of those changes. For example, social care, school, bus services, potholes. And what we're seeing is they're infighting. Their priority is something else. So that's why I put my name onto that letter asking Nigel Farage to step in and take some action.
In reality, isn't this just a bit of a political stunt? You know, why would or should Nigel Farage listen to you and these other MPs? And if tables were turned, you know, if Keir Starmer was getting letters from Reform MPs saying, hello, Prime Minister, will you please support my agree with me that the Labour leader of my local council should resign because they've had an embarrassing stunt? Surely you would view that as ridiculous.
No, it is not political stunt at all. As we know, when Reform got elected into KCC, Nigel Farage was down in Kent, publicly addressing their councillors and their supporters, talked about we're going to have a Dodge in Kent, we're going to save lots of money. So he was actively involved in Kent politics. So as their national leader, we should write to him and get some attention from public and the wider Reform Party. So that he should have some kind of accountability for what's happening in Kent.
Do you think he's too involved with or too close to the Reform administration at KCC, given that while he's their party leader, you know, he doesn't have any mandate to advise or be involved with KCC?
Well, if you have listened to that video, it sounds like he is very much involved, because the leader of KCC was saying in that video that we need to make sure Nigel is happy with our decision we're taking. So I think that there is no democracy in Kent. The public elected their councillors, but looks like they're not able to talk or make their views heard. But the administration want to make sure Nigel is happy with their decision.
Mm. I just wanted to ask you, Sojan, you know, you probably saw the video probably around the same time as the rest of us on Saturday afternoon. What was your reaction when you saw it?
Well, it's an absolute shambles. I was shocked to see that video. I would not want my leader to talk to me like that. I've been a councillor. As a councillor, you take the views of your the local members, your local public. Mm. So the councillors were trying to say, I mean, especially that meeting was discussing such an important meeting about local government reorganisation. Mm. And this is such an important matter for Kent. So they need to work with the district councils. But what we've seen is we know that they submitted their recommendation for one unitary authority for Core Kent, which seems to be the councillors are not happy with, and not a single Kent resident will be happy with, because we have seen KCC as such a massive organisation not able to deliver for the Kent people. So that's why the local government reorganisation is such an important matter. I was shocked to see that video that there was no democracy in their party and there's no discussion.
Well, having said that, gentlemen, the County Councils Network have actually agreed with Lyndon Kemp-Caron's stance that only a single unitary authority in a two-tier system going forward is the one that will actually deliver the government the savings your government wants.
Well, I don't agree with that. The idea of one single large unitary is too big. Kent is geographically, Kent is quite diverse. The needs of people in Margate is different to the needs of people in Tunbridge Wells. Mm. The needs of people in Ashford is different to people in Canterbury. So I think it would be a disaster if you're going to have a large unitary authority. Mm. I mean, my background in health, working in mental health, I know that we have many deprived areas in Kent. Not every part of the Kent is the wealthy area. So we need to have two or three unitary authorities where we can deliver for the people.
But I think the point I was trying to make, Sojan, is that the government, one of the reasons for doing it is to simplify local government and transfer more powers to local people and make the planning process a bit quicker. But it also is meant to save, I think, 2.5 billion over a 5-year period. But the experts in this, so the County Council's network, are saying that it can't be done if you want to have 3 or 4 unitary authorities within that system. So Lyndon Kemp-Caron, in that respect, as leader of KCC, calling for a single unitary, is actually closer to the experts.
The current system is absolutely not working. Mm-hmm. I agree with that. Your observation on that. Yes, we have so many district councils. I mean, I was a councillor and I wanted to get a double yellow line down the area I was a councillor for. So I had to go to the district council, who sent me to KCC, and then KCC sent me back to the parish council, said this need to be included in their highway improvement plan. So the current system is so complicated, it's not easy to navigate through. And it took 4 years to get a double yellow line in one of the roads. So the current system is not working. It's not delivering. It is too expensive. Mm-hmm. That's why the government want to reorganize local governments. But one single unitary is too big for Kent. As the reasons I explained earlier, every part of the Kent is not same. So we need 2 or 3 unitary authorities. I know the money is one big factor, but I think more important, yes, we need to save the money. It's more than money. We need to make sure things are getting done for the people.
There are some people who would argue that the content of that video, while it was quite ill-tempered, isn't really all that damning. Lyndon Kemp-Caron is leading a group of people who are not experienced councillors, many of whom have not been elected before, with the attention of the entire country, basically on account, because of its political balance, on a county council, which pretty much never happens. And politics attracts basically quite difficult and tempestuous personalities, and she's got to keep them all in line. Some, you know, some people say, who hasn't sat in a meeting and been that frustrated? Who in her position would not be very annoyed? I mean, what do you think of that?
Well, you can see this as a short tempered, but you're all public servants. You're talking to councillors who are equal to you. You're not dictating things to the councillor. The councillors are trying to bring the issues that matter to the local area. They represent the people. So I think it was a desperation to show that we can do it, but it's not a way of doing it. It's not a democratic way of doing this. I agree your observation. There's a lack of experience in running local governments. If you can't run a council, how are you going to run the country? That's the bigger question we should be asking.
We're coming up to the 6-month anniversary, if you like, of reform at KCC. How do you rate their performance so far?
As you know, my background in health, and I'm trying to improve the health services in Kent, especially mental health services. I chair the All-Party Parliamentary Group for Social Care. As of today, 61 patients who are ready to be discharged from mental health beds are stuck because of lack of social care provisions. 61 beds is almost 25% of total mental health beds available. So this has a huge impact on rest of the services. Hundreds of beds in other hospitals like William Harvey are blocked by patients who are ready to be discharged and can't leave because of lack of social care provisions. And this has a huge impact on A&E services there. And we heard all over the news about they're using the coffee shop to put patients in. So social care is one of the areas. School provisions. You probably heard about lots of issues around Chilmington School in Ashford, where school was open with no provision for a walking path. Local bus services, the potholes. So the 6 months on, There were additional money was given to for the, all these services. So I know 6 months is a quick time and we can't expect everything happening overnight, but we need some actions. And we, that is what the administration should be explaining to us, that in 6 months, this is what's happening. We MPs are struggling to communicate with KCC, and I know the district councils are struggling to communicate with the KCC. We're not getting the responses back. We want to work with them to improve the services, but that's not happening.
So, Jen, surely it's not particularly reasonable to imagine KCC to have made much progress on this kind of thing only 6 months after election. They're dealing with 15 years of austerity, which ruins the budgets of local councils, ever bloating public sector costs, saddled with social care, which eats up, you know, a gigantic amount of their budget. You know, if the Labour Party had won the election in May and taken over KCC, surely you'd find yourselves in quite a similar situation. Do you really think there's any way they could have made noticeable progress on potholes and education and social care in 6 months in a authority which is as crisis-ridden as KCC?
I agree with you, but you wouldn't have seen a meeting like what we saw the other day. So the Labour, if it was a Labour was in administration, we would have been working with our councillors, listening to the councillors, working with district councils, local MPs, other stakeholders, hospitals, ICBs. We would have been doing that. But that is what's missing here.
This whole thing has been rumbling on though for quite a few days. How do you think the whole saga over the video will play out? Do you think Lyndon Kamkhamran can really survive this?
Well, public has raised their concerns, the media has raised their concern, MPs have raised their concern, and we are expressing our frustration that this is not what we want. We want a properly run council. So it is absolutely an internal matter to their party to select who their leader is. If the leader has enough support, it is their internal matter. But we want to continue to raise it, hold them accountable for running this council. We want to improve the service for the people.
So, John Joseph, MP for Ashford, thank you very much indeed for your time today.
Thank you, Simon. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we should also mention that we asked Reform to put up a representative for interview today, but they declined. Interesting stuff from Sojan Joseph there. The wheels appear to be wobbling for Reform's KCC leadership this week, but the big question, I guess, is will Council Leader Lyndon Kamkhamran survive? Dan, you've been watching this from afar. What do you reckon?
Whether she'll survive or not, I have no idea. On the one hand, it would look atrocious for them to overthrow a leader so quickly. On the other hand, it already looks pretty bad anyway. But I do think it's interesting that obviously every other party is very keen to capitalise on this, and understandably so. But people are acting as if this is something special or unique to Reform, and as if this shows that they're sort of uniquely unsuited to government. But I think quite the opposite. It shows that they are a pretty normal political party like any others. Members of political parties really, really, really don't like each other. Anyone who's ever been to a political party knows this. Big parties often have factions. Their contempt for each other is often at least as strong as their contempt for other parties, because everyone wants to control the vehicle they're using for politics. And the reason why this kind of thing is embarrassing is basically just because of the language and the style of it, and her attempting to exert authority by swearing and raising her voice. But this kind of thing happens in other parties all the time anyway. It's just that those parties have had a century or more to develop these complicated internal languages of innuendo and euphemism and style, which is intelligible only to other party members, but express pretty much exactly the same sentiments. I think the only Lyndon Kamkhamran's misfortune here is just for it to have been recorded and to have been caught swearing. I don't think the sentiments she's expressing or the relationships it expresses are in any way remarkable or unusual.
But do you think she can survive?
I really don't know. It depends how much of an appetite her flock have for regicide.
Yeah. Okay. Rob. You've been watching it as well. What do you think?
I mean, on whether she will survive, I think she will. I don't think that there is a natural successor or an obvious successor at this point. She has the support of the National Party. Nigel Farage basically is close to put her in the job, basically. So I think from that angle, I don't think she's going anywhere. I'd slightly disagree with Dan in the sense of, yes, obviously other political parties have their own internal factions and have their disagreements. I think the thing about this is it's happened so quickly that and Reform has obviously all parties have their disagreements, has generally a united front on what they're going to do, and the fact that within 5 months already people are leaking things and trying to undermine Lyndon. There's no real other way to look at this other than somebody wants to get rid of her, which after such a short period of time.
But I mean, the video, let's face it, the video was designed to damage her.
Mm. Yeah. And so, I mean, what does it say about a party that within 5 months is already sort of, well, somebody obviously recorded that and put it in the back pocket, because it's not a recent video, it's from a couple of months ago, I believe. So somebody kept that in the back pocket. So already, even after a couple of months, somebody would think, I'm going to need something to take him.
Yeah, you know, I've been trying to read into the timing of it. Why then? And, you know, why did The Guardian publish it on a Saturday afternoon? It just seemed there was no big vote coming up. There wasn't a by-election in the offing or anything like that. None of those things kind of made sense for the timing of it, unless The Guardian had been sitting on it for a while. That I don't know. Nikki, what do you reckon?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of whether she'll survive or not, I think she will, unless something else emerges, which it may well have done by the time this recording actually reaches air. I mean, she won't have taken on this job without realising it was never going to be an easy ride. There was always going to be some leak like this happen, I think, and her authority challenged, although, like, when, you know, Rob says, it's very early days for this kind of thing to happen. But when you're bringing together a new group of people, and a large group at that, who are all ambitious, you're going to have big characters to manage, but how you go about managing them, that's the big question. Now, let's be honest, we've all sat in meetings where the temperature has risen and maybe someone's let the odd swear word slip. But when those words are directed at people rather than policies, I mean, that's unacceptable. She knew from the start that reform leading KCC was going to set a benchmark for the future, and every little bit of what they do, and especially her role as leader, was going to be scrutinised. Mm. So they should have been making sure that whatever they did, it was done properly from the outset. And even beyond that, it was going to get scrutinised. Now, you know, Simon, you've been hearing for a long time that not everyone in the party is happy, and now we've been able to see why. Still, if nothing else, it's shown us that the honeymoon period is well and truly over, although it seems it finished quite early on. And it doesn't really matter which party you're in at the moment. No leader seems to have 100% backing of their colleagues.
It is quite difficult when you have got 57 out of 81. This isn't Parliament, this is Kent County Council. People do these jobs part-time, except if you're in the Cabinet, in which case you're expected to do it full-time. But most people, it's a part-time thing that they do, you know, for a small amount of money in expenses. But they have to fit it alongside a full-time job. Maybe you've got kids, maybe you've got, you know, other responsibilities, caring responsibilities or other things, and you don't have a lot of time to do it. So if you've only got between, say, 20 and 30 cabinet positions to give out, they're still going to leave more than 20, 25 people who are not going to get cabinet positions or positions of authority. So it does leave quite a few people sort of kicking their heels on the back benches, which is what happened in the last administration, the Conservative administration, that after a couple of years, they weren't very happy and they started to make trouble for the leadership. In fact, there was a leadership challenge of Roger Goff, which he won. But it was interesting sort of parallels. If the question is, do I think she'll survive? I think the numbers show that she probably will survive, if indeed there is a vote of no confidence in her. Okay, that's your lot for this week. Thanks to Dan, Nikki and Robert for their contributions, and our special guest, Sojan Joseph. Don't forget to keep an eye on Kent Online for the latest politics coverage, and you can also sign up to our politics newsletter by visiting kentonline.co.uk/newsletters, and don't miss KMTV's politics show every Friday at 5 p.m. I'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Kent Politics Podcast. Don't forget to check out stories throughout the week on the politics page of Kent Online. And you can watch the Kent Politics Show on KMTV every Friday at 5 p.m. or on demand at kmtv.co.uk.
This has been an I Am Listening original podcast. For more information, head over to our website, iam-listening.co.uk.